Welcome to With All Due Respect, where we discuss big questions with grace. And it's absolutely great to have you along. I'm Michael Jensen.
And I'm Megan Powell Dutoit.
And in this episode, we're going to talk about, strangely perhaps, since we're all locked in, about travel, whether travel is a pilgrimage or an indulgence. We discuss the spirituality of travel with author Stephen Liggins, who's written a book on travel, and we take a walk with the movie, which journeys along the Camino. It's called The Way.
For argument's sake, where we take a debate, cut out the party politics and try to talk it out. As Michael was saying, we're in a COVID world in which currently hardly any of us are going anywhere. I'm just excited to go to the supermarket currently. And it looks like we could have international travel restrictions for quite some time. Some people are even saying maybe for into 2022. And that's occasioning some grief for people as suddenly their lives seem more restricted. And so even though it seems like a funny time to talk about this, we actually wanted to look at the concept of travel. Is it something that we're entitled to? Why do Christians travel? Is it something that we should see as necessary for either mission or pilgrimage? Or is it an unnecessary luxury that could even be harmful? I mean, when you look at Christian travel these days, you have theological colleges that get them in as subjects that you do. Sadly, that came in after my undergrad. You've got Christian travel companies that set up Bible-themed travel. And short-term mission is quite a debated concept, but still lots of people are going on it. So it's something that we use a lot as Christians, but also we have some mixed feelings about. And certainly, and I think when you brought this up, Michael, as a potential thing, I really had a class sort of reaction to this because I didn't go overseas at all till I was an adult. Neither of my parents went overseas at all in their lives until after when I went overseas. So I was already moved out. So I've got a really different background to travel. But you, on the other hand, are meant to be traveling at the moment and not.
Oh, yes. I was supposed to be on just the weekend. I'm supposed to be going to the United States on a conference. And that was looking forward to that, of course, and never been there before, going to New York and all that sort of thing. And so I'm really feeling the quite directly the grief as those sort of dates in my diary clock by. And it got me thinking about this issue of travel and why it's so sort of so near to our hearts, why it's sort of you get that yearning to travel when you go, to drop someone at the airport or pick them up and I think, oh, the airport. Oh, it's great to get on a plane. I mean, it's great to get on a plane and then 3 hours in, it feels like hell. But, you know, oh, it's just that great feeling of leaving everything behind. And then, I mean, even in my Connect group, my Bible study group, we've done a get to know you game where we say, what's your favorite place to travel? And people, you know, people have been all over the world. They've been to Azerbaijan, they've been to Peru, they've been to Malaysia, they've been to Macedonia, they've been to England, of course. And so it was so precious to us that such an identifier for us that we'd had a travel experience. It was something of a rite of passage, a way of identifying, you know, perhaps something to do with our identities. And it's a story to tell. It's supposed to enrich you. And so all of that kind of makes travel, you know, we grow through travel. We want to understand that the world is a different place and it sort of makes you a more mature person when you understand the diversity and the richness of the world. And yet it's expensive too.
That idea of growth, for some people's minds, it's still quite a sort of personalized fulfillment kind of idea. So you do get that and, you know, it's great to do mission trips or to do what's called poverty tourism, you know, where you go and see how the other world lives so you feel more grateful for your stuff.
Look at those poor people.
And often, you know, the critique of that is sort of almost poverty porn or that you're using these other people and their real lives in order to sort of enrich your life or to have some sort of personal sort of transformation. And there's a problem with that.
I went to visit, I went on a trip to visit my friend in the Republic of Macedonia in the Balkans, and I was doing some speaking and stuff. At the airport, there was a group of tourists or people from a group of older people from another Western country, let's just say, who'd arrived on a mission trip. And my friend's friend, who is a pastor, was picking them up from the from the airport, and he said, "Look, the next 3 weeks, I've got to follow these people around. They think they're doing a mission trip, but essentially, it's tourism." And I can't refuse it because at the end they'll give me cash, right? So I've it's cash more than I could probably earn in ages. So I can't not do it. They support us, but I've got to follow them around and make sure they don't hurt themselves. So really they were quite a burden, and it was all because you know, they thought they were doing something spiritual and useful, but they weren't in fact.
And even sort of mission itself becomes, is it great for Westerners to still go on mission, or should we be looking for people who come from a culture closer to the one that they're going to? Things like that. Who's it really for when we travel, I guess? And is it okay to do travel just for pleasure?
Well, just for pleasure is interesting. I guess the idea of travel emerges from a spiritual sense. Christians have always been travelers. I mean, the Jews, of course, were travelers. They were forced to travel. They were kind of kicked out of Egypt and then exiled, and they had to return and what have you. But the Christian missionary impulse has always been to travel, to really do, you know, to take the gospel. That's been the Great Commission. So we feel like we have a vocation to travel, a reason to go to other places, to learn other languages and to understand other cultures. There's a purpose for it. So travel seems to be part of what being a Christian is about at some level, for the purpose at least of sharing the gospel.
Well, I mean, that's really interesting because there's a strong travel motif in scripture, but at the same time, there's a strong home motif. So the travel, you know, you think of the Exodus or the journey from Abraham out of Ur, or the missionary travels in the New Testament. But there's always this sense of there's a place that you're traveling to. It's never just sort of directionless travel. And home is important too, putting down roots and settling, and that we'll all be home finally in the age to come is a really significant motif.
Yes, but for Christians, it's not located, is it? So we don't pilgrimage to Jerusalem. It's nice to visit Jerusalem, it'd be fantastic. Mm. Jerusalem is this sounds a little bit romantic, but Jerusalem is wherever the gospel goes. You know, that's for now, it's the New Jerusalem lies ahead of us. Like, home is not located in that sense. The presence of Jesus goes with us rather than us having to go to it, but we carry it with us. So there's a reason to bring that, but not a reason to go to it. I don't have to go to, as an Anglican, I don't need to go to Canterbury Cathedral. But where would Baptists pilgrimage to?
Well, no, we don't have that concept of pilgrimage at all in that way. Although, yes, missionary faith is really strong. In fact, I had a sort of ancestor-ish off on a line who was the first person eaten in the Congo. And so that's, you know, a matter of pride within my family. But I think you're right. There is that sense of that we have something to take. We have a restlessness in our faith because it is in our home here. So that restlessness does play out. We want to go somewhere. We want to take something. So it still informs what we're like at home, if you like.
Yes, although what it does say to us is you don't have to go anywhere to find yourself.
Yeah.
You might go somewhere to take the news to someone else, but you don't have to do a self-discovery. Doesn't come from journeying to some version of Mecca, some Christian version of a location.
What's really interesting about that for me is the way that we've used the idea of the walk to Emmaus, which has become this deliberate journey you go on. When you look at that passage in the Bible, in fact, they're people that are running away. They've given up. They're leaving Jerusalem and they're just running away, and Jesus follows them.
Come back.
Jesus is going, whoa, come back. You're going to the wrong place. God pursues us, I think.
Ah, well, that's very interesting because Karl Barth, of course, talked about the God's journey to find us. And this was the journey of Jesus in the far land. You know, that's a scriptural motif again, that it's God who comes seeking us rather than we who go up the mountain to seek God.
Absolutely. I think that's what we've got to remember.
Still to come, we talk to author Stephen Liggins about how to travel as a citizen of heaven. And then we look at the idea of pilgrimage in the movie The Way. Be our guest, opening up the conversation to others. Well, today I'm very excited to have someone I've known for quite some time. His name is Stephen Liggins, and he's the Senior Assistant Minister at Springwood Anglican. He's also a very mean fast bowler, or he used to be back in the day. And he's just published a book, in fact, on sport and Christianity called The Good Sporting Life, Living and Playing Sport as a Follower of Jesus. That's just come out with Matthias Media, available at all good bookstores, but that's not what we're talking to him about, because he also wrote a book a couple of years ago, back in 2017, called Traveling the World as Citizens of Heaven. Also, you can get that at Coorong and other places. And Steve really examines in that book in a very helpful and pastoral way, practical way, but also very deeply theological and biblical way, the whole concept, the notion of travel and what it means. It does play such a large role in our lives. We've been talking a little bit about the sense of grief that we've been feeling that we've been noticing about the loss of the ability to travel. I wanted to start by asking you, Steve, what does travel mean to you? Have you noticed this sense of loss around during the epidemic?
Yes, so I think I have. At our church, a lot of people had planned holidays, overseas trips of a lifetime, those sorts of things, which they've been waiting for ages. And then suddenly they had to cancel them all. So I think a lot of people's rest, recreation, visiting of family, all those sorts of things has been taken away from them. You can't even travel much within your state or interstate, so people are caught at home. I read in an article in the paper during the week, it was online, that said travel is one of the backbones of Australian life. Now, I don't know whether I'd quite agree with that, but travelling is something rather which is very much ingrained in who we are and what we do, and having it taken away, like the loss of sport, the loss of entertainment, it does have quite a big effect on people.
What should be your favourite place to travel?
Well, I actually never really expected to travel much when I was growing up. I mean, our family holidays tended to be trips in the Valiant station wagon around New South Wales and outback Queensland and things like that. But when I was 20, I went to London. I went over to play cricket, basically. But when I was preparing for it, it suddenly occurred to me that I was going to be in England and near Europe. And that trip was one of the, formative experiences of my life. It was just wonderful landing in the land of Jane Austen, the land of cricket, the land of black taxis and red phone boxes and things like that, all these sorts of things I'd seen on TV. Suddenly I was there. I loved it, and I had a wonderful time there playing cricket, going to church and just travelling around when I could.
And so what should we do with this idea of travel theologically? I mean, what does it mean for us? Is it an exploration of the good world that God has given us? Should Christians think of it that way?
Well, I think if travel pretty much just means leaving your usual environment to go somewhere else, we can travel, up the coast, interstate, overseas for a whole range of reasons. It could be for rest, holiday, could be to visit family and friends, it could be for work, it could be for mission work. Really, there's a whole range of reasons why someone might leave their home and go somewhere else. And so I guess you could look at each of those situations and figure out what it does mean. But I guess one thing, if we're sort of traveling to see new places, it's good to remind ourselves that we're not just traveling the world, we're traveling God's world. When we're traveling, we're seeing the things which God has created, we're seeing the people that God has created, and when we leave our home or our home country, we see what God has done and what God is doing in places other than where we live. And so I think it's really helpful to remember that, the beauty, the wonder, the incredible people we come across, we're visiting and seeing what God has created, and we can learn a lot about God that way.
I found it really interesting with your book that you take up that idea of creation, but you also take up another really significant theological concept, that of the fall. How does that affect our travel?
Well, I mean, we can clearly see great beauty in the world when we travel. I think of Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, one of the most impressive things I've ever seen, double rainbows in the spray, incredibly scenic, awesome, wonderful. Mm. But then when we go travelling, particularly if we travel outside Australia, we'll come across, I guess, the fallen nature of the world in ways we're not used to. We can see great poverty. We can see sex tourism. We can see glue sniffing on the streets. We can see all sorts of things. And I think one thing which particularly those of us travelling from Australia need to do is we need to be prepared to see, I guess, poverty and suffering and tragedy on a scale we're not used to, because it's a fallen world, rejection of and rebellion against God has impacted people, relationships, all sorts of things. And so I think we need to be able to figure out how to deal with suffering when we see it and those sorts of things.
Well, what about adding in the idea of redemption too? I mean, what do we see do we see evidence of God's work in salvation as we travel?
Yes, I think we can see evidence of all sorts of good things when we travel. And in fact, one of my hopes is that if we travel, we can be a catalyst for improvement. I think, in the way we treat people traveling, you know, just being kind, being thoughtful can be great. When we're traveling, one of the things I try to do myself when I travel is to pray that if there are people who God wants me to speak to encourage them, perhaps Christians, or to witness to who may not be believers, that God would lead me to them. And so at that individual level, we can be involved in, I guess, you know, pointing people towards God as we travel. And I've had some wonderful experiences traveling, talking to people, you know, in buses and on the sides of roads and in youth hostels and things like that. But also, for instance, when I've been to Africa, you see poverty, you see people begging. And so I've thought, well, I've enjoyed traveling in Africa and working in Africa. So I try and support aid and mission work in Africa with my finances, and I pray about it. I was traveling up in Vietnam years ago, and I met some people from the Hmong tribe, and I discovered there'd been a great revival amongst the Hmong a decade or two earlier. So I now try and pray for that people group and support mission work there. And so I think with our money and our prayers and how we treat people, and you know, we can actually work to, I guess, improve the situation of people and the world and make the fallen world hopefully less fallen with God's strength, of course.
It's really interesting that you bring up people there, because you know, the motif of the journey or the quest is such an important one within the stories that we tell ourselves in our world. But also the companions along, or the people that you meet along the journey, a really significant part of that narrative as well. I mean, what would you say to that?
I think people make travel what it is. So we often go to places because we think, oh, there's a nice mountain there, or there's a great city there. But what really makes a holiday or a trip or an educational overseas experience what it is the people we meet. I love meeting people. From that first time I went overseas to London about 30 years ago, I'm still in contact with one guy I played cricket with 30 years ago. I'm still in contact with about three or four people I went to church with. I just love them. People from all around the world. You find out about their lives in their countries, that sort of thing. And it's just wonderful, I guess, to meet and enjoy people from quite different cultural contexts to that in which we've grown up.
What would you say about travel as an industry and a business? Because it seems to me that sometimes when we travel, what we encounter is something inauthentic. You know, we love to be sold that something is the authentic experience of Barcelona or whatever it is, but then what we're really seeing is the tourist bit. You know, it's the bit where all the travelers go. It's not the real thing in one sense. It's a performance of the thing. I always found it funny when you go traveling and you're in a crowd of tourists, and the worst thing is when other tourists stand in the way of your photographs, because you want them out, because you want the appearance that you were the only one there. But what would you say about that, and how could we travel in a way that's perhaps more authentic?
Well, it all depends what you're after. It's still nice looking at a mountain, whether there are tourists there or not. But I guess from my personal experiences, I've got more into a country where I've actually met people who live there and do normal things with them. So when I went to London when I was 20, I joined a cricket club and I just hung out with cricketers doing the things that the local cricketers did. When I've been to Africa to lecture over there, I've hung out with some of my hosts and just done what they've done. I think the best way to get into another country is to actually meet and do something with the people who live there, whether it's play sport, go to church, working, studying, whatever. And that way, I guess you see life more from the inside rather than from the outside.
Would there be forms of travel that you would say, would there be opportunities of travel that you would pass up on as a Christian?
Sex tourism? I would pass up on that.
Pleased to hear it.
Yeah. Oh, look, I guess when I think of, I mean, there are all sorts of reasons to travel. And I think you want to travel for good reasons. You want to travel responsibly. We want to be good stewards of the time and money God's given us. We want to think about our relationships here and tie all that into it. But I think if there are good reasons to travel, if we feel we're being wise with our use of money and time, it's not being detrimental to relationships, I think any form of ethical tourism or traveling or journeying is fine. I mean, when I was younger, I tended to prefer backpacking rather than going on a package tour, but there's nothing wrong with a package tour. I think it's probably a matter of taste when it gets down to that.
I've taken a package tour, so I'm fine with a package tour.
Michael, I have since then been to the Gold Coast, gone on package tours and been on a cruise. I have compromised everything I once held so dear when I was younger.
Well, I don't know if cruising will ever happen again, do you think?
The tourist industry, the travel industry, has taken a horrible hit. I heard it was something like a $9 trillion industry worldwide, and that must be just getting absolutely hammered at the moment. You know, airlines are shutting down.
Yeah, well, Virgin's shutting down, and some countries like New Zealand is very dependent on its tourism. What do you think, given that we are unable to travel so much at the moment, what are the ways at home that we can get some of the same benefits that you're talking about that we get from travel?
That's a good question. I read a book a few years ago by a guy called Alain de Botton called The Art of Travel. And one of the things he said, which I think was interesting, is it's not just the travel or the trip itself which we enjoy, but it's the anticipation of it and it's the recollection afterwards. Now, as I was thinking about this, I can't go on family holidays at the moment, but I can still anticipate our next family holiday and enjoy planning it, and that's good fun. And I can also reflect back on things I've done or we've done in the past and enjoy that. So I guess there's the recollection and the anticipation, which we can still have. Other than that, it might be, you know, walking the streets and having a picnic in your backyard. Or I guess you can read travel books or watch travel documentaries and things like that.
My feeling is at one level, living with the lack tells us something about ourselves. You know, I'm just trying to grasp why that is, why I'm feeling the grief. There's a grief for a lot of things that have been taken away, but why this thing in particular? And I think maybe I was too attached to the idea of travel. I put too much significance in that. I liked being able to, you know, I loved being able to say, oh, I've been to, yeah, when I was in Malaysia.
Yeah, I guess without trying to sound overly pious, I think we want to take the opportunities of travel, which God gives us as a great gift from God, but they're not a right. We don't need them. We don't want to rely on them. I think they're just something rather which we can appreciate, I guess, as a gift. But sometimes I think people, Christians, anyone can get a bit obsessed with travel and it becomes more of an idol than the way it should be. And I think, you know, that's one of the potential dangers, like anything, you know, which we enjoy, it can take on an over importance. You know, we can make sport our God or music our God or traveling. Not that we make it our gods, but we can sort of rely on it too much.
And there is that sense, isn't there, Michael, of trying to see all these places before you die. It's like, it is very much connected with the bucket list thing. And that was making me think, Stephen, then of what you were saying, that the idea of anticipation is a real Christian concept of the wonder of anticipation. And I wonder whether what you're saying there of the lack, Michael, is that perhaps with this we can remember again that we're not trying to get it all done here. It's not about this place, but we can anticipate that place where there's no lack.
Yeah, that's where I'm coming from. It's not about collecting stamps in my passport. Nice as it is, I kind of like looking at my stamps in my passport. And, you know, the more exotic, the better. That's kind of fun. But these are, the anticipation is actually, there's a deeper longing in my heart that this might point to. I think that's, Steve, would you change anything in your book for the post-COVID world?
Look, I don't think I really would. I mean, in the book, I basically encourage people to travel with God, to, you know, keep your relationship with God close when you're traveling. To remember we're traveling God's world. We're appreciating it, that it's a fallen world. We've got to be ready for that. And to be on the lookout for opportunities to, I guess, encourage believers, be a witness, enjoy people's company. And also I think it's good to travel wisely. So, you know, have we got good reasons for traveling or poor reasons for traveling? Are we being good stewards of our money and time? And how does it impact key relationships? So I think I'd say all those things still, but I guess the application of it's going to change at the moment because, you know, overseas travel doesn't look like it's an option at the moment. I think perhaps the interstate road trip or the road trip might make a big comeback, like my childhood.
Stamps from Wagga.
Yes, but you could come to my holiday house, which is looking a bit lonely at the moment. Well, Steve, thanks so much for being with us today. I hope you enjoy whatever travel we are able to do in the future. And a reminder to our listeners that Steve is the author of this great book, Traveling the World as Citizens of Heaven, and a new book about sport. We haven't done a sporting episode yet, The Good Sporting Life.
And there's both a reason those, for that.
Both of those are published by Matthias Media. And you can get them online through Matthias Media or through Coorong or any good bookstore. Thanks very much, Stephen.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you, Megan.
Thanks. Marg and Dave, two people obsessed by stories, but not always the same ones. And the story today is the 2010 film The Way was directed, produced and written by Emilio Estevez and starred his father, Martin Sheen, was actually inspired by a journey that his son made. And it's based around the traditional pilgrimage route of the Camino de Santiago and promotes that traditional pilgrimage. And in it, Martin Sheen is a doctor whose only son, Daniel, played briefly by Emilio Estevez, is killed one day into walking the Camino. And this is it's a really sweet film, but it's very much based in the tradition of the journey film or the quest narrative, and self-consciously does that. So it's got lots of songs and images that recall some of those other narratives like Moby Dick or Don Quixote or songs by James Taylor. So if you are really into that whole genre, this is wonderful for that. And we're going to be watching it in our new Marg and Dave Club, where we sync watch movies with people on Facebook. Michael, how much did you enjoy this?
I enjoyed it very much. I mean, once you get over Martin Sheen not being Jed Bartlett for once, what's the president doing on that? he's a terrific actor, and he has a Catholic faith, I believe, quite a strong.
Yeah,
one.
So, he does. Yeah,
you know, I think that's authentic in this kind of quest, this sort of spiritual quest. There's a collection of characters. The central man is on this journey to. It's a journey of grief. It's a journey of trying to discover why his son died, what his son was looking for, and to take his son's ashes and to complete the journey in the name of his son. And so it's extreme. That's extremely moving and painful. And in the end, of course, there's not really an answer. That's the kind of trick of the quest here. The quest is the quest to reconcile himself to the relationship he had with his son when he can't actually speak to his son, to do the thing for his son. That needed to be done. And that's true of the other characters as well. They all have a problem they need to resolve or an issue they need to kind of, but that isn't necessarily what it first seems. So there's a woman who's saying that she should give up smoking. That's why she's doing it. That's not really what the quest is about.
No, it's almost an atonement quest for her, I think. It is a religious pilgrimage for her, as we discover, I think.
Yeah, and the suffering. That's a very strong part, the idea that you suffer on the way, and so therefore, and that common death is what makes someone a true pilgrim.
The question is, what does it take for someone to become a true pilgrim on the Camino? Is that right, Jack? How about death?
Yeah, you get Martin Sheen's character saying that against all the other possible reasons. He's saying, well, death makes a true pilgrim.
So suffering, and you're doing your own atonement to do this. And so in that way, although I have enormous sympathy for it, I kind of want to release the characters. You know, I kind of want to say the Christian call to come to Christ, there is a discipleship, a journey of discipleship. And, of course, Christianity itself is called the Way, originally in the Book of Acts. But it's a journey where you've already entered. You know, the Pilgrim's Progress, for instance, that journey narrative starts with him. He's already come to Christ, if you like. He sort of can give up his burden. I think that's what I felt kind of compassion for the characters in that.
Well, it is really interesting. I think at the end you sit there going, did any of them achieve their quests? And maybe not, but what they do, I think, achieve is it's the companionship along the way that almost becomes more important than their actual whatever quests they think they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. The relationships between the characters are what is transformative, and they are able to heal one another in some way, to some degree, to teach one another. There's moments of truth. And, of course, at first they don't like each other. That's what's kind of nice about it. And they're all angular and all. They're all a bit unlikable in their way. They're flawed, and yet they can't collectively mug on. And the journey does something, at least, to heal them. Although I don't know what would happen if they had a reunion, in 5 years' time, they came back and did the did the Camino again. Would you find where would they be now?
I mean, did they stay in touch? Actually did make me think about the community of the church, because we are sort of on a journey together, and some of them are sort of your irritating, garrulous Irish writer, and some of them are, you know, your inappropriate Dutchman. But still, the learning really occurs in the journey together rather than it being an individual journey. I think that for me is one of the beauties of the film. Well, thanks for being part of With All Due Respect. And coming up in the next episode, we're going to talk about the experience we're all living through of a very anxious or crisis-oriented world. Are Christians people who should join in the anxiety or not? Should we ever be people of crisis?
But don't worry, we'll be here. And we're looking forward to your company next time. So it's goodbye from me, Michael, and it's goodbye from...
From me, Megan. See you then.
See you.
With All Due Respect is hosted by Megan Pal-Dutoit and me, Michael Jensen, and it's produced by Mark Hadley. It's edited by Bella Ann Sanchez. With All Due Respect is part of the Eternity Podcast Network, which is an audio collection showcasing the seriously good news of faith today. Head to eternitypodcast.com, where you'll find show notes and other stuff related to our episodes, and click onto our Facebook page, please, please, to join in the debates with All Due Respect.
You've been listening to the Eternity Podcast Network, eternitypodcasts.com.au.